Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of One Vision, the FinTech Views. This is Theo, your host for the episode. Joining us today is an old friend, someone that I still have not yet managed to meet in person. One of these days, we'll do that. Megan Johnson, FinTech advisor, researcher. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Finally.
Yeah. So much. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Yeah, I remember it was, I think, almost 5 years ago when the roles were reversed and we had you on Architects of Change. So it's long overdue and it's been a while.
It has been a while indeed. You were one of the first ones who actually talked to me about the book. That was fun. It was a show with three authors. I still remember that. It has been a while. So get us up to speed on what you are up to. You've moved. You have new roles going on. I mean, what else?
Yeah, it's, when I started to think about what I've been up to in the past 5 years, like a few things came to mind and then I was like, oh, wow. And then this and all this has happened. So, I mean, it's been 8 years since I've been kind of on my own, a solopreneur, freelance consulting, and I still love it because it really just allows you to do so many different things across so many different types of geographies, so many projects, incumbent banks, fintechs, regulators, management consultants, teaching as well. So I guess thinking about in the past couple of years, I've been doing a lot of work with bank as a service providers and embedded finance enablers in Europe. So the kind of bank as a service scene is a bit different to what it looks like in the US. And so here it's more, players that will either get a full banking license themselves or an EMI license, and they will create product solutions, APIs, the tech stack and everything to help fintechs get up and running or allowing brands to embed finance. And interestingly, we've started to see incumbent banks like NatWest, SUB in Sweden, start to make this bank as a service play. So it's a really exciting and interesting time for embedded finance and bank as a service. And yeah, I've been helping a couple of these fintechs really define what some new micro economies would be for them, for their go-to market strategy. So thinking about the fact that any company can become a brand, and thinking about, what would an embedded finance or bank as a service solution look like in the sustainability sector and the e-gaming sector, within business management tools, the care economy, for example. So helping them understand where there's some opportunity and what a kind of product and solution could look like when they target potential partners and what that will then look like for the end consumers. I've done some really interesting projects with some regulators via my partnership with the CFTE. Shout out to all the amazing people at CFTE. So we did this amazing 6-module fintech course for a regulator in the Middle East. So I got to teach recent graduate hires about fintech, how to build fintechs, customer experience, open banking, and that was really, really cool. We also did an event at the Inclusive Fintech Forum in Rwanda. So we ran a closed door session for regulators and other stakeholders on how to retain and kind of build up talent. So I talked about the Estonian model and what makes Estonia so unique, and I need to check if it's still accurate, but I believe Estonia has the highest proportion of startups per capita out of anyone in the world. So a really interesting model. Last year, I became a fintech contributor at Forbes. So I actually always wanted to be a journalist when I was looking at universities. I was like, oh, okay, I want to do a journalism school. That didn't happen. So now I kind of feel like it's come full circle a bit, being able to write for Forbes. I'm working at Mission 42, which is a trade tech venture building studio. So based out of Brussels, helping to build solutions for SMEs in Europe that trade. I've been doing a lot of research into financial inclusion, inclusive finance, as part of a book that will be out soon that we've chatted about recently. So I'm writing this with Alessandro Hatami, should be out later in the year. And I bought a house and moved to Portugal since the last time we spoke. So that's probably the biggest change. So yeah, that's been amazing. And as a result, I've become more involved with the Portuguese fintech community and startup scene, which is small but really thriving. A lot of interesting startups here in the crypto and B2B fintech space. And working with a couple pre-seed fintechs, kind of as an advisor, helping them get product all set up, supporting them with finding the right partners to actually build the solution. So pretty much still a generalist, a researcher, everything in fintech. I will never leave fintech unless I have an early retirement and then just spend my days in my garden.
So normally when we talk to people, hey, get us up to speed, and people are like, oh, COVID, we adopted a pet. I don't know, we wrote something, we built an extension. You did all of that.
We did adopt a pet as well. I didn't mention that, but now we have two dogs. So the first was a COVID dog, and then the second was a let's rescue a dog from a shelter in Portugal.
Okay, now. All right, I adopted a bunny. Now I feel like I should have done 15 times more. How do you find time to do that? Literally, the list is so long. I don't even know where to start. You taught, you worked with a pile of different companies in different geographical locations. You're writing and writing more. Oh my goodness. Okay, let's peel that back a little bit. Where should we start? Let's start with what you recently announced, which is amazing. And we need to go back to the inclusive finance one because that's always my passion area. But before that, let's talk about climate. So recently you shared that you have joined the Climate Savers team as an advisor, amounts of 500,000 things you're doing. Tell us a little bit more about Climate Savers. What are they? And why do you think this is the next generation of open banking? I think that's how you described it. And I thought it was fascinating.
So it's actually a really fun story. So Rory, who's the founder of Climate Savers, I actually met him back in 2017 when I moved to Berlin. It was the first conference I spoke at in Berlin. It was API days when I was talking about, open banking, what back then it was still quite nascent. So what a couple fintechs were doing, how they were using open APIs. So I met Rory. He had this idea to save the planet. And yeah, then last year we kind of reconnected and he talked me through, what he's been up to since 2017. And he's developed this really amazing solution called Climate Savers. So Climate Savers basically helps consumers make micro choices to shop more sustainably and using transaction data to understand what their carbon footprint. I think in the US definitely, as well as in Europe, we're pretty much moving away from a cash society. So, all of our spend is on our payment cards, which gives us really rich insights into how we're shopping in terms of sustainability and our carbon footprint. So there's a number of different facets with Climate Savers, but the foundation is the account history and using the payment cards. So consumers can get cash back for shopping at green brands. So these green brands are vetted by a third party through an affiliate model. So, when I shop at Allbirds, for example, get some new sneakers, I get cash back into my Climate Savers account, and then I can either make a payout to my bank account, or I can put that towards offsetting my carbon footprint into a high value project. We do a lot of projects with biomass. So, when I log into Climate Savers, I can get a running tally of my carbon footprint, but also see which transactions are having a not so nice impact on the climate. So we are looking to the B2C model, but we're also looking to kind of package this into employees that want to offer this as a perk to their employees. Sorry, so offering it to employers who want to offer it as a perk towards employees. And similar to how, employers will match employees' pension contribution, we allow employers to match their employees' carbon offset contribution. So kind of rethinking about this kind of matching between employer and employee. And another cool thing that we have is a leaderboard. So, imagine Accenture in Boston versus Accenture in London versus Accenture in Singapore. And we've also kind of brought in this competition gamification to see, who's doing better in terms of shopping and spending more sustainably. Why I think it's kind of the next generation of open banking is that, in Europe and the UK, we have quite mature open banking regulation and this really goes beyond just, you know, helping me understand where I'm spending, how I can save money, what my monthly budget looks like. It's really taking something non-financial associated with your transaction data and bringing kind of a whole new level of insights. Yeah, so I think it's one of the more promising use cases of how open banking can eventually play into this open finance space.
It's expanding the pie on what we can do and what we can impact. I love exactly. that. For a purpose, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the work that we still need to do on the climate front is huge,
yeah.
big, challenging, immense. Yeah. All of that above. And in some geographical locations, more so than others, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We've been talking about what roles banks can play and should play, but we've been talking about that for a while now, right? What do you think needs to happen? Because there's obviously that was and has been the focus on where are we putting the capital? Are we putting it in where it is impacting the environment, or are we putting it to help us transition to where we need to be? I think that's an interesting role banks can play. But yet, we are where we are, 2024. What else should we be thinking?
Well, I mean, it's so hard to know for sure, you know, if you're investing in a green ETF or, you know, a B Corp or a company which shouts to the rooftops about what they're doing from an ESG or environmental perspective, like, don't really know if that's true or not. So I think I don't want to say it's hopeless from these kind of thematic ETFs. But again, I think the thing with climate savers is that, you know, it makes it very easy to do something day to day. You know, for example, like when I have to book a flight, you know, for work or something, like I noticed that airlines are now having this like kind of third tier, which is like the green package. And it's like, you know, for an extra 50 euros, I can do a carbon offset and apparently it's like more green. And I'm like, I just don't trust this. Like, what are you actually doing? And how do I know that what you claim you're doing is what's actually happening? And I think that, you know, by being able to take control of, you know, what we spend day to day, awareness of what kind of vetted green small businesses are, because I think when we look at what banking has done so far, it's focused on the large corporates, right? And focused on investment, where I think this kind of where we make conscious decisions to spend, you know, it's these little things that can add up. And, you know, I know a lot of people would love never to get on a plane again and be able to travel via, you know, train or a more sustainable means of transport. But I know in the US, that's absolutely not an option. And also, you know, the same in Europe, like, you know, I live in Portugal, and even to get to Madrid, it's expensive. It takes a long time. There's multiple changes. And, you know, from the transport perspective, which is, you know, a big part of, you know, what's been leading to climate change. The solutions aren't there. So I think that banks can look to partner with companies like Kogo that we talked about. So fintechs and white label solutions that can integrate, you know, climate centric insights for consumers. I think that's, you know, a no-brainer for banks. I think that, you know, every bank, in addition to personal finance management, should have personal carbon footprint management if the consumer cares about this, right? So, I mean, Marie and I, we were looking the other day at a Reddit thread about I'm not going to name and shame the bank, but it's a European neobank. And we just went through this like Reddit thread, and there was a lot of people that were very skeptical about banks offering anything to do with, you know, your carbon footprint, you know, doing anything from mitigating climate change. And I think like there's still a pretty big proportion of people who don't believe that climate change is a thing. And I think these people, you know, tend to have distrust in mainstream institutions, including banks. So like, I don't want to say they're a lost cause, but I think, you know, there's definitely a large enough cohort of consumers that want to do something, and it has to be as easy as possible and seamless and integrate, you know, in their day-to-day life to make a difference and to get mass traction. I think also something I've actually been thinking about for years now is how can How can the blockchain be used for better traceability with, you know, giving and donations? Like, I know a lot of people are a bit hesitant to donate, to make charitable donations to some of the larger corporations, again, because it's this trust issue. So how do I know that you putting my money that I'm donating into the right cause, you're doing it in the most efficient way? And I think looking about kind of, yeah, more innovative types of technology, I think blockchain is still an untapped potential to kind of help. I don't know if that would necessarily tie in with banks, but you kind of, I don't know. I don't think you can talk about finance without talking about like blockchains and DLT and everything. So that could be an interesting use case.
Well, especially looking towards the future too, right? What got me really excited was it 2 years ago? I can't remember now. That was when Stellafi announced a partnership to allow displaced refugees to be able to get money at any of the MoneyGram locations with the local currency, right? So there are definitely a lot of use cases where we can use blockchain for more inclusive finance. And I think we're just touching the surface of what can be done. And hopefully, you know, the world will keep progressing where we will be more willing to look at what tech can do instead of staying with the status quo. Now, speaking of which, you talked in the very beginning, in your spare time, I have no idea how you do that, you were teaching a few things, talking with recent hires and how to build, et cetera, et cetera. What makes you excited about teaching? Because that is a really interesting. I came from a family of educators. Mm-hmm. I always found it fascinating for people who want to teach, who want to spend time to teach. It's a very special skill set that A, requires obviously knowledge, but B, requires a lot of patience and empathy. It's amazing. What gets you, why did you want to teach, and what, if you could, what would be the things that you want to share more time on?
Yeah. So I think after I got over the wanting to be a journalist, I was like, I would love to be a professor. I think that would be so cool. Like to just, I think you're very fortunate if you can spend your time, you know, learning, researching, and then passing that on to others. And a lot of the teaching I do is for, you know, mature students, for professionals. So, you know, they have an appetite to learn more. The work I do with Manchester Business School, it tends to be for mature students who are working for a big tech company, or, you know, like a mobile network operator where, you know, fintech is starting to creep into their remit. They need to get up to speed. And, you know, for some of the students, it's the first time really digging into a topic that I've been looking into for over a decade, like quite intensely. So I just really like kind of sharing like how exciting and how innovative and how much has changed within the world of, you know, fintech and digital finance and everything. And the teaching we did with the CFTE for the recent graduate hires, it was amazing because it was so interactive, this course. We had like polls, we had quizzes, we had breakout rooms, we had presentations. In one of the courses, they had to create a fintech and then pitch it to us as if we were like VCs and everything. So you can get real creative, and then it just becomes, you know, so different from the day-to-day consulting of with, you know, big corporates and banks and everything. So it provides a really nice level of variety, I think, in, you know, the day-to-day. And I mean, I don't even really consider it work, but I guess what you do like professionally. Yeah.
I love the ability of being able to share and learn from, you know, especially as you say, people who have an appetite to learn. Because they always bring with them a different perspective, and they have more passion, right? As opposed to some of the ones that we talk to day to day is more jaded, like, oh yeah, you know, we've tried that, we've been doing that, et cetera, et cetera. Why change? Nope, it's fine.
100%.
So it does, and I like what you just said, is for those who can actually have time to spend and share an exchange. I think it's a wonderful opportunity, and it's a privilege to be able to do that. So I won't ask you for a crystal ball at this point, because I can't, like, I think the last time when we talked, first of all, I didn't know that it was going to be another 5 years before we talk again. Need to change that. Second of all, I absolutely would not be able to predict all of the things that you have done. So I won't even ask, like, what's your plan for the next 12 months? No, but I am very curious. If we were to ask you, what are some of the big trends that get you the most excited, and what should we be on the lookout for? What would you say?
Well,
that's a big question.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different answers. It depends if you're wearing, like, you know, your European fintech hat, your kind of broader tech hat, your global fintech hat, your kind of what's going to happen to incumbent banks. But I think from a European perspective, like, there has been so much innovation and just amazing stories and new solutions from fintechs and, you know, greenfield propositions from incumbent banks. And I feel like now a lot of the neobanks are starting to hit profitability. It feels like fintech has grown up in the past year. And I think this is due to market conditions, also due to, you know, regulators forcing fintechs to grow up a bit faster. And so just thinking about, you know, the bank as a service, embedded finance scene, I think similar to what's happening in the US, there is a lot more oversight from regulators, which I always say, you know, financial services is one of the most regulated industries in the world, and it should be, because you need to have that friction to keep, you know, customers safe, to keep their financial livelihood safe. So I always think regulation is a good thing when done correctly. So starting to see a bit more regulation. I mean, also in the EU, we have MiCA, which is the regulation for cryptocurrency. So I've been speaking to a couple individuals and early stage startups that are looking to take advantage of the fact that, you know, Europe has actually laid out what that regulation, what the process is for starting to play within the cryptocurrency space. AI, of course, it's just not going away. And I think it has so many use cases, and every bank and corporate and startup, everyone I speak to is looking to understand what role AI can play in their organization. So whether that be improving the end product, improving customer support, improving the claims process if you're an insurance company. So AI, I think, is definitely huge. And also with the School of Digital Banking program that we're doing with CFTE and the Central Bank of Egypt. So we're now very much focusing on AI in terms of the different modules that we're running for that course. I think also I'm really excited about what's going to happen in emerging markets. So last year, I was really fortunate to go to Rwanda for the Inclusive FinTech Forum. Over the years, I've been doing work with KPMG in Nigeria. And that conference in Kigali was just nothing like I've experienced before. Just the energy, the entrepreneurs that were there, the vision of, you know, the incumbents, the government. I think emerging markets is going to be super exciting to watch. And I'm hoping to, yeah, become a bit more involved in some of the big projects and innovation that's happening there.
I'll put one more on your radar for next year, if you can make it, Barbados or somewhere in the islands. I was just there this past January with Ali. And a few others.
Yeah.
And I felt what you just said, the energy, the passion, and actual seeing collaboration, right? There were banks there, actual banks that are willing and excited to talk to people. You don't see that often, especially in established markets, right? They just stay with themselves, with their friends and whatnot, but they're actually there. They want to talk to you. They want to talk to the startups. There were regulators there from different islands in the region, and they were all eager to do something together. And they were all different phases and names and people that you don't typically see in European and US conferences. So I love that so much. So put that on your agenda. That way we can actually meet next year.
You don't have to twist my arm to get me to go to a Caribbean island, that's for sure.
Right, in winter, in the middle of winter. And I don't think I ever asked you this. So before I let you go, I do want to ask you, because you said in the beginning, you'll never leave fintech. And what inspired you to be part of that community to begin with?
Oh, it happened by complete accident. Like, I completely...
You walked into fintech.
Like, everything in my life has just been a very fortunate accident, like how everything has turned out. So before I got into fintech, I was in kind of full-scale market research, working for agencies in the broader kind of financial and professional services space. So like still doing stuff for Amex and Citibank, also supporting due diligence for like the big PE houses like Bain. And I just got offered a job at this small company called Mapper Research. Map only did digital banking research, working only with incumbent banks. They had banking clients all around the world. I love to travel. So I was like, okay, cool. I get to go, you know, run a workshop with a bank in South Africa and some of the big credit card companies in the US. And it was just kind of the right place at the right time. And I think, again, just the pace of which, how fast things have evolved within financial services, like, always keeps it interesting. And I think, again, because we have to have regulation, there's always this kind of push and pull and finding this balance. So it's, you know, it's always like trying to put a puzzle together when you think about how to meet customer expectations and needs, how to fulfill, you know, your business strategy, but also how to make sure that you are on the right side of regulations. So it's really this balancing act. You know, no project or approach or, you know, bank or fintech is the same. So yeah, there's everything's quite fast moving. And again, the diversity, and of course, you know, it's quite challenging, again, because we are in this regulated industry. So yeah, I kind of fell into it, and then it just kind of stuck with me.
I think quite a few of us would resonate with that. We fell into fintech. And I am glad we actually ran into each other. So thank you so much for spending time with us today. We will need to do this in person, of course.
Yeah.
And 100%. It will be less than 5 years.
I hope.
Yes, we'll make it happen. Well, thank you so much again. And for the rest of our listeners, thank you for joining us for another episode of One Vision, wherever you are. And we'll talk to you next week.